quasi-cerebral talk and tunes. You are tuned in to Typically Tuesdays here on CJSF 90.1 FM. We are, of course, the campus community radio station broadcasting up on Burnaby Mountain at Simon Fraser University. And this episode of Typically Tuesdays was produced and is broadcasting on unceded territories of the Kwikwetlem, Musqueam, Squamish, and Tsleil-Waututh First Nations. At Typically Tuesdays, we recognize the host nations as being the original storytellers and knowledge keepers of these lands, which is why we acknowledge where we produce the show and also broadcast the show every episode. Typically Tuesdays thanks the host nations for their stewardship of the lands and the waters, without which we are not even able to make this program. I'm Leslie, and today's episode is very special. I gotta be honest, today I had something else planned. And spoiler alert, it was gonna be about idols. I had gone to this exhibition at the Chinese Canadian Museum a few weeks ago with a friend. They've got an exhibition right now happening all about the golden age of Chinese language pop music, you know, 1980s to 2000s-ish. And so obviously, in that exhibition, it's going to be kind of about idols, right, as well, right? You got Leslie Cheung, there's a lot of great stuff by Anita Mui, you know, there's some Aaron Kwok in there, there's, obviously some great homages and stuff to Teresa Tung. And then the other part of the episode was going to be saved for an interview that was also going to be about idols. And as it turned out, the interview was so poppin', so non-stoppin', so insightful, so fun and exciting that I think you ought to listen to the whole thing instead. I think that we can save the my unhinged thoughts about this museum exhibition for another day, because as lovely as it was and as deeply as I connected to it, you know, it's all about how pop music kind of helps shape diaspora, which is amazing. I also had a lot of intense thoughts. Intense and also, actually, I think also valid thoughts, to be honest, about idols in general. We'll save that for another day. We cannot open that box right now, because if we open it, people will suffer. You will suffer, because we got to get on with the show. Today, you are going to be hearing an interview that I did with the organizers and performers of Moikai. It is a J-pop centric mini music festival happening this Saturday, July 12th, over at the Gaming Stadium in Richmond. And the organizers of the event, Anime Social YVR, they're a small kind of organization of folks who are just really, really, obviously really passionate about anime, really passionate about a lot of really fun kind of nerdy things in Japanese popular culture, one of them of course being idols. And then we also got to talk to a number of the performers who are going to be there, actually a lot of the performers who are going to be there, because the organizers and the performers are very, very intimately linked, as in some of these people are performers and organizers. Talking to them was so great, because I got to learn a lot about the inner workings, I guess, of performers who take on the task of being idols in a dreary little city called Vancouver. and why they decide to do these things and how they organize themselves. And it just gives a lot of really fascinating insight on a topic, I guess, that, as you know, the listener, I've been turning in my head as though it were a rotisserie chicken that is no longer succulent, no longer juicy. That bird is dead and dry. I think I've used that analogy a number of times on Typically Tuesdays, and it remains because it is a good analogy. Because, yeah. I think about idols a lot. Anyways, you're going to be hearing that interview, and I hope you enjoy it. For now, let's listen to just a teeny bit of music as we transition over to the interview. You are going to be hearing Winter Mint Pea and Czar Party. Winter Mint Pea is actually a Canadian Vocaloid music producer, which is really great because I've filled my CanCon quota. But also, yeah, I guess it totally actually does make sense that, like, a concept, a thing that transcends borders such as Vocaloids could also be produced in Canada. I hope you enjoyed this one. Again, by Winter Mint Pea, featuring Czar Party. Here is Always Keep Dancing. Of course I value Canadian content. I make Canadian community radio. What are you talking about?
Consists of love. This is Bird Note. A mated pair of sharp-shinned hawks, swift bird-catching predators, perch side by side, slender, dashing, gray and rufous hawks. The male is J-sized, just over 10 inches from the top of his head to the tip of his tail. The female, however, stands a head taller and weighs almost twice as much. This seems odd. In most birds, if the sexes vary at all in size, the male is larger. But with many hawks and falcons, the pattern is reversed. And female birds of prey are most notably bigger than males among hawk species that hunt very agile prey. Why is this so? Perhaps the female sharp-shinned hawk's larger size ensures that she may safely dominate the male through courtship and nesting, with a mate who is, after all, a highly aggressive bird hunter. The smaller male will tend to hunt smaller prey. The female will take somewhat larger prey, so together they can tap a wider range of resources, including this unfortunate Douglas squirrel. Despite his smaller size, the dapper male is a good provider. Early in nesting, while the female concentrates on incubating the eggs and then brooding the hatchlings, the male does most of the hunting. Sign up for weekly preview emails and subscribe to the podcast, too. It's all on our website, birdnote.org.
Welcome back to Typically Tuesdays on CJSF 90.1 FM. I hope you enjoyed that PSA about sharp-shinned hawks. I recently saw a sharp-shinned hawk on a walk with my friend Sam, our elusive guest host sometimes, and it was the first time I ever saw one. It was a magical experience, and it was also eating a rodent. Just a feast for the eyes on a regular Sunday evening. Right now, I am joined by the organizers and performers of Mo'ikai, an event that is kind of like a Battle of the Bands event. It's going to be happening this Saturday, July 12th, at the Gaming Stadium over in Richmond. Tickets are on sale now, but we're going to be talking all about all that stuff in the rest of this hour. So put a pin on where you're going to buy tickets. Thank you, everybody, for joining me today. Let's do a round of introductions so that the listener can get an idea of your voice and who you are. Please go ahead and introduce yourself. We'll start with Pocket.
Hello. First, I just want to say thank you so much for hosting us on Typically Tuesdays. My name is Pocket. I'm one of the people behind Anime Social YVR and one of the organizers of this Mo'ikai event that's really looking to bring the idol community together and bring it out and show it to more people. Besides that, I'm also part of Cloudtown Idols, one of the performing groups, and one of the other members will introduce that later. So yeah, nice to meet everybody.
Hey, hello, I am San. I am one of the organizers for Anime Social and Mo'ikai, and I'm also the guitarist for the band UAM.
Mickey?
Oh, me? Okay, sorry. I thought you were giving a cue. Sorry.
Oh, sorry.
Hi. I would also just want to say, first of all, thank you for having us. This is a really awesome, fun opportunity. My name is Mickey, and I'm part of Voyage 7. We are an anime idol cosplay cover group that focuses on doing covers of anime idol boy series. We have been active in the Vancouver idol community for almost 10 years now. So for this upcoming event, we'll be performing as the characters and units from the popular series Idolish 7.
Hey. Hello, my name is Xue. I'm from Cloudtown Idols. We are a Vancouver-based overseas idol group. We have been doing original choreographies for Vocaloid songs, J-pop, and anime songs. We've been active since 2022 and are working towards Mo'ikai with our covers as well as our original choreo for Monitoring by Deku 27.
Hi, I'm Peachy from Estella. Thanks again for having us on the radio show. Super cool to be on here as SFU alumni. Everything comes full circle. So I'm Peachy. I'm from the girl group Estella. We're a 5-member overseas or Kaigai idol group that aims to unite the feeling of idol and idol otaku. So we began covering 2D idols like anime idols, mostly Love Live. But we're coming up on our 2nd anniversary, and since then we've kind of branched out into 3D idols like Chika Idols and AKB48, if anyone recognizes that name. Our members are idol fans first and foremost, so our main goal is to create a fun atmosphere where everyone can feel idol joy.
Awesome. Thank you, everyone. As you can tell, listener, it's a pretty stacked lineup we got going on here on the program, and a pretty stacked lineup that's going to be happening at Moikai later on this week. But for the listener who's not aware, we're going to be using this term throughout our discussion today called Taiban. What is a Taiban and what does it entail?
So I was actually wondering, Peachy, do you want to take this question? Just because I feel like your idol knowledge is supreme.
Oh, really? Oh, thank you. It's an honor. a Taiban is like a group idol event sort of thing. So traditionally in Japan, groups perform like 5 times a week, especially like even AKB48, they perform every single day. But it's not really financially sustainable for every group to perform by themselves every week. So they have like group events where every idol group has a certain like time slot. And so it's basically just a big collab of idol groups. It's like Eurovision of idols, except we're not fighting. but yeah, so Taiban just means like band. So it originally comes from bands, but like the same night sort of thing. So performances at the same night. And then it's generally followed by like a toku tenkai or bupan, where you can meet all of the idols as well and purchase their merch. So it's a good opportunity to like meet new idol groups, because generally Taibans can have like up to 100 different groups in them. Sometimes there's only 5, sometimes there's like 100. Like there's one happening tonight, actually. I think there's like 30 that's being streamed. But yeah, so usually you go for 1 or 2 groups, and you can often like find yourself discovering a new group or a new favorite member.
That's awesome. Okay, so yeah, it's like a big music festival, I guess, if we're gonna kind of like localize it to like a Vancouver audience. Except there's also a meet and greet involved, and that's a really big part of a lot of idol fandom culture, especially with J-pop, which is that usually after the show, or oftentimes after the show, I guess depending on which group it is, you do get an opportunity to meet your favorite member and to take a photo with them, which you'll be able to do, of course, also at this event. What's exciting to me about this event is that it's kind of like a highlighting of J-pop music culture or J-pop fandom culture in Vancouver, and what a great place to hold it, because in Vancouver we've got such an awesome music scenes in general, great indie underground, got a lot of really like awesome electronic music. But the thing about this particular event is like the focus on the J-pop as well is like a little bit more niche, in that it's focusing on idols and anisong, which is anime songs. I'm really interested in understanding kind of like where you're all coming from with that, other than having this shared love of J-pop and probably and performing. What gave you like the precipice to start doing it in Vancouver? What made you decide to start performing?
I would like to take this first one. When we first started, our biggest goal was to actually share the love for idol boys in the Vancouver idol community, because when we first started off, it was just, there were a lot of girl groups and Love Live groups all around. So we were like, you know what? We need to see a little bit of we need to see some change. And why let's be the change we want to be, you know. So we wanted to show a different side, so we wanted to show our idol boys, and ever since then we've seen this rise in the like this representation of boy idols in the community. So that's how we started off, is not just the love for the performance, love for the series, but also just, hey, boys can be idols too. And that's what we are.
Awesome. Thank
you. Anyone else have a more traditional story they want to share before I share mine? No?
Okay. I can.
Sure.
Yeah. So basically, we were a student club in like 2018, and then we started doing Ororenita first, and then in 2022 we decided that we wanted to go to Annie Weevil, so we just started the group, and that's basically how it works. And then also all of us were really into like Annie songs, Vocaloid, and also groups like AKB48. Yeah, so basically that's how I got.
There's a term you're using there, Shire, that I'm actually not too familiar with. Could you explain odotemita?
Odotemita is when people are doing dance covers, whether it's other people's choreography or their own choreography. Yeah.
Okay, awesome. Right. Thank you.
The term is literally, I tried to dance in Japanese, yeah. And it comes from Niko Niko Douga, which is essentially very, what's it called? Like a niche interest YouTube for Japan. And so basically there's a lot of fan content on there because it's really meant for fans of niche things. And so there's a whole genre developed called I Try to Dance, which is people doing dance covers to their favorite songs. And so that's the term odotemita, and it's prevailed to this day, and you can still find it on YouTube and Bilibili, which is China's YouTube.
Yeah, and also it also contains a lot of different dance styles. It's not just like hip hop. It like really is like everything related to their favorite J-pop songs, yeah, and stuff.
I appreciate like the slightly defeatist attitude of the term. Like, I tried. Here you go.
Yeah. Usually it's like with the song title. So like, for example, if you're doing Monitoring by Deco 27, you say, I tried to dance Monitoring.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Or it's also like same with like singing. It's like, I tried to sing Unravel, like my cover of this sort of thing. So it's like an original existing thing that you are trying to emulate. It is a little bit like humble though.
Yeah.
Thank you for that explanation. Peachy, do you want to go next?
Sure. I got kidnapped into an idol group, but basically I have known the other members, Ivy and Sunny, for a long time. We actually met on Twitter in like 2017. And then I moved to Vancouver. And then whenever they were practicing at the dance studio, they invited me and they said, could you please teach us K-pop dances? So I would transit like 2 hours to go to dance studio. And I would teach them like viral K-pop dances. And then they were like, oh, actually, we're practicing for our idol group. And I was like, oh, that's cool. Okay, bye. I didn't know anything about Love Live. I only knew like the famous quote, like, Niko Niko Ni. I knew AKB48. I was a big AKB48 fan and like K-pop fan, but I didn't know the first thing about like J-pop idols. But then fast forward to 1 month before their debut, one of their members got really sick, and so she couldn't perform. So Ivy texted me. She said, hey. She said, please, can you learn these three dances for this performance? Because it's for Anime Revolution, which generally is considered like one of the biggest conventions in Vancouver. So I learned the dances, and she said, I already have a costume for you, and I already have a wig for you to wear, because we were going to dress as the characters, but there was no costume and there was no wig, so we made do. And then I performed with them, and then the rest is history. I kind of thought, like, how can I leave this behind, sort of thing. And for it, I watched Love Live, all of the Love Live animes. And honestly, I think now maybe I'm like the deepest into idol hell out of all of them, even though they dragged me down with them. But for them, they started because actually at conventions like Anime Revolution, they watch groups like Boy Seven and Cloud Town Idols, and they felt really inspired to do the same, because a lot of them, while they don't have any dance experience, they really resonated with like the joy that idols bring, even like kaiga idols. So they thought we should do that too someday. So they rounded up all of like honestly a really random group of people, and then they kidnapped the fifth, and then history. But actually, it's all thanks to other Vancouver idol groups like Cloudtown and Boyish.
Awesome. San, yeah. What about you?
We started from the UBC Anime Club. It was just me and my other friend. We really like this one vocally produced studio, and he has a band called Supercell. They've done songs like World Is Mine, like Melt, like those like old classic vocally songs. So we wanted to initially cover those songs at UBC Anime events, like their Halloween, Valentine's events. And that's kind of just how we started, and wanting to cover like vocalist, Ryo Supercell songs. But now we've branched off into so many different genres.
Yeah, that was kind of the thing that I noticed when I was looking up your stuff online and watching you guys perform. I was really struck by just like how versatile your sound is, because like the realm of, I think the realm of like J-pop, when like we conceptualize it here in the West, it's like just this general idea of like Japanese pop music. And then when you get into the niche kind of other things within those fandoms of like Vocaloid and like Anison, it's like really hard to pin down, right? Especially with like anime music. It's all dependent on the property that it's accompanying. And so like on one hand you have like music like from Cowboy Bebop, like Tank, which is an incredible jazz piece, and then on the other hand you can have something from like from like Chobits, and it's like this like cute little bubblegum pop song. Specifically for you, San, if it's all right for me to put you on the spot, like talk to me about building that versatile sound.
I think it comes from like a lot of our members come from different backgrounds. Initially, three of our members had classical backgrounds. I had one of our vocalists, she had her ARCT in piano. I have my ARCT in clarinet performance. And Max, our current pianist, I don't think he got his ARCT, but he's really, really good. So he's really into jazz. Our bassist and drummer are also really into jazz. I'm into metal. Our other guitarist is kind of into metal rock. And our other vocalist, she's into like J-rock and stuff. So I think a lot of us come from different genres, and that kind of lets us play like a lot of different stuff. We're not like focused on just one.
That's awesome.
And everyone, like during our song like set list meetings, everyone kind of pitches in what songs they personally want to perform, and they're like all over.
Yeah, that sounds about right when it comes down to anime music. Thank you for that, and it's exciting to hear about just like how diverse the music that you cover is, and how well you all are able to do it. As I understand, well, first of all, if you're just tuning in, it's Typically Tuesdays here on CJSF. I'm Leslie. If you're just joining me on the hour, I'm talking to the organizers of Moikai and also the performers. Moikai is going to be like kind of like an idol J-pop music festival out here. That's going to be happening this Saturday at the Gaming Stadium in Richmond. As I understand it, Anime Social YVR, which are the organizers of this event, you've already put together a few idol-centric events in the past. I think, if I understand correctly, you've done maybe like one per season since like maybe summer or fall of last year. Tell me more about the idol scene in Vancouver. We got a little bit of a glimpse from the various different perspectives that you all bring, but yeah, tell me more about the scene out here, especially from an organizer's point of view.